what we needed. Good evening, everybody. This is the Joy of Sacrifice by E.J. Gold, and tonight we are on sacrifice number 17. So we've come a long way, kids. The fact that we've been able to survive 16 sacrifices, or at least some people have, I don't know. Some people may have fallen off. But this particular sacrifice is, we're approaching the end. Let's do a little bit of housekeeping first, though. We have one more class. I think we're going to take next week off. Next week is the night before Thanksgiving, and I believe that's when Santa Claus comes. So
right.
We won't be having the class.
Yeah, I will actually be out of town.
Well, if Ivan's out of town, forget it.
Right.
We're not having the class. So
I could send my clone, as you suggested.
I've met your clone. there was a mistake.
I see. Okay.
And anyway, so no class next week. I'll send out a reminder email in a few days. But then we'll have the final sacrifice the following week, which winds up being November 30th. And
November 30th.
Yeah, and now we could consider whether or not we want to have an additional class to wrap up, you know, that sort of thing. And then after that, we'll take a break into January. And if people would like, and I've got a little bit of feedback, but if people would like, we're going to go through Life in the Labyrinth. Does that make sense?
Yes, starting in January.
Sometime in January. Life in the Labyrinth is, it's a mouthful, I'll tell you. It is, it's quite something. So we'll do Life in the Labyrinth in January. Ivan has been working feverishly to get more copies available for those that don't have copies.
Yeah, right.
Day in and day out.
Feverishly something.
That's right. So anyway, if you need a copy, call in, or you can go to gatewaysbooksandtapes.com and get a copy of Life in the Labyrinth. So, where are we tonight, Ivan? Tonight we are on 17. We've come a long way, haven't we?
Yes, we have. And I would think for certain we should have an extra week.
Okay.
On this book, because we could talk about the entire course of sacrifices.
Yeah.
Or
and we should probably talk again about just the idea of sacrifice. And this is called the Joy of Sacrifice. This is not called sacrifice. If you pick up, and I have, pick up some of the like Catholic literature on sacrifice, let's just put it this way, it's not joyful. It's not, it's,
right.
it's grim is a good way of putting it. But this, there's a reason why it's called the Joy of Sacrifice, I believe. And that is because when you sacrifice the mechanicality and the comfort of that world, you can walk into a new world called the essential self. But you can't get there without going behind what is the standard habits and our lifestyles that we have, Ivan. You have to go find something new. And we've been finding that, there's no question. And we're finding little gems along the way. This chapter is actually maybe one of the most challenging sacrifices yet, because it puts more responsibility on the hands of each of us. And that's what we want to get into tonight. So let's just go ahead and get started, okay?
Right.
So this is on page 237, Joy of Sacrifice by E.J. Gold. And this 17 is called The Sacrifice of Suffering and Despair, Life of Awakening. It's just, once again, it's like three paragraphs, but my goodness gracious, they're just loaded. Now one transcends the fourth and fifth bodies developed through the sacrifices of hope, self-pity, and sacred obligation. I'm going to take a little time on this one, Ivan, okay? Because I really do want to ask what each area means. Each one is loaded, and each sentence, I think, brings us a lot. So what does that mean, these sacrifices of hope, self-pity, and sacred obligation? And then we transcend the fourth and fifth bodies. Simon, you're up. So we, in the previous sacrifices, we sacrificed self-pity,
yeah,
and that was the life of benevolence.
Right, and prior to that was hope.
Correct. So, and that enters into the life of nothingness. But then there's that little phrase, and sacred obligation. So what does that tell us? Where are we at that point? Now one transcends. So if we can get to a place where in the last few sacrifices we overcome the natural habit of this habit of hope. I call it a habit because it's always with its handmaiden, fear. Hope and fear always walk together. So we've overcome that in the couple of weeks ago. And then last week, the antidote to mechanicality of self-pity is called benevolence. And we worked our way through benevolence, and we asked, what have you done that's a true benevolent act? And we got some very, very good comments. And you made some really interesting comments, Ivan. So that, there's something. But then there's that sticky phrase, and sacred obligation. Okay? Now, we understand that when they talk about fourth and fifth bodies, when he's talking about it, Barry's referring, I think, to some of the literature that Silverdale may help us with in the seven bodies of man. And now, through this work, we're at that level, whatever that means. We don't have to technically, at the moment, define these things in order for us to do some work. And that's my slant on this material, okay?
Hey, Dave, maybe I could just quickly interject. So much of this work we're doing is directed on the assumption that we have a life force within, which animates our physical body, which we call our essential self. And much of this joy of sacrifice deals with the separation of our essential self as an independent force, which has been submerged by our physical body and our historical personality. And I've always presumed that, as Gurdjieff taught, you know, we have man number one, two, and three that is whose center of gravity is either in the thoughts, the feelings, or the body. But he strives to become a man number four, a householder, in which, in my understanding, is where there is a shift in gravity from the historical personality and physical body to the essential self. And in that case, the essential self is developing a higher mental capacity and a higher capacity for feeling in accordance with his nature, which is, in many ways, just light and infinite extension. And so when this talks about the sacrifices of hope, self-pity, and sacred obligations, it's describing this shift from the hope, the self-pity, and the sacred obligation of the historical personality that has gradually been eroded and replaced by the transcendent power of our essential self as a predominant center of gravity for our experiencings.
Okay, so we've come down the road to that place where there's the beginnings of where the essential self, the scales are tipping a bit. They're tipping toward a life of internality, where we are not living the external life. That is the reactivity that creates a machine and it's sleeping us. But we're starting to live in a different way. So we are there. Now, are we there 100% of the time in every single? No, that's not the point. The point is that you've tasted this particular wine and you know it. You know how to get back to the fine bakery where this is made, okay? You know how to get there. So that's the one transcends the fourth and fifth bodies. One begins to intentionally develop mental powers or CDs over the material universe. In this effort, one is forced to pass beyond the barrier of sentimentality into the realm of impartial justice and the beginnings of conscience. Okay? So,
David, I have a question, if I might.
Yeah, please.
This is Harry. I have a question of George. Is the fourth body, this body Kesjan, where it takes on the primary center of gravity over everything lower than it?
Exactly right, Harry. That's my understanding. And, you know, Gurdjieff calls it the body Kesjan, but I think of it as the ethereal, our etheric body as well. You know, it's trying to crystallize the spirit that animates our physical body and grow it so that it is predominant and has, of course, an entirely different set of possibilities than are available to our physical body or our historical personality.
Right. The reason I ask is because even EJ has used different schema to talk about this. You know, the old way from the book on the seven bodies of man, and then more recently in his book on astral travel, he's renamed those bodies. So it was confusing to me a little.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that for us, we have to. There's two ways of working here. And we have some guides with Silverdale and with Harry that are truly scholars and starting to understand the underpinnings of these mechanicalities. Some of us that aren't doing that work are able to also derive from that things that we can do on a pragmatic basis from where we're at.
Right.
And so
the pragmatic probably would take precedence, I would think. It gives us something.
We need both, Harry. We really do. We need the guides because we get into places where I certainly need, and from Silverdale, guidance from time to time. Well, what is meant by that? And when I get that, it does clarify the step forward for me. We all work and we bring our particular signature to the path, okay? We bring what we have, and it's in collaboration that then the group can go forward. Nobody here can do it on their own. We work together. So we work with as much, each of us has a skill set. And without all of the skill sets, it doesn't work. But fortunately, we have all of them together. So for me, what I'm saying for some of us also is, use the sensing mechanism, work with the sensing mechanism, and consider these ideas of, in this effort, one is forced to pass beyond the barrier of sentimentality. Well, consider that.
Yeah, that suggests by doing this effort, one passes beyond that barrier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems good. Like the sentimentality is be fairly easy to overcome at this point. You know, before we pass it by, I like what you're saying about this is an effort of teamwork, let's say, working with this group, with this discussion group that you've been maintaining here. I would like to know, again, I think George alluded this, but the sacrifice of sacred obligation, I'm still not clear on why that goes along with hope and self-pity. So, George, I think George, you were suggesting that this formulation, this sacred obligation, is something that's going with the lower bodies, with the historical personality, like self pity. In other words, is that what you get out of this passage, that it doesn't mean that?
Exactly right, Ivan. You know, look at all, we're born into a prison in which everybody is asleep and dead. Somehow, each of us here tonight has been touched by the realization that there is another possibility of awakening. And we take it upon ourselves as a sacred obligation to the Absolute to awaken ourselves. And in doing so, we rely upon the hope that that such a possibility exists. And of course, as we proceed down the road, we develop a degree of self-pity because we realize the impossibility of what we're trying to do in the midst of the environment that we find ourselves in, and the difficulty of mastering ourselves in order to achieve that objective of sacred obligation to wake up. So that's how I understand this.
So are we giving up? I could understand that we need to give up hope and give up self-pity. So are we giving up our concept of sacred obligation? I always thought of that as positive.
You know, and actually, I don't see it in the way I explain it to myself is that all of these. I'm only repeating what Gurdjieff says, that the purpose of all teachings and religions and philosophies and schools is to explain how unity passes into multiplicity and diversity. And once you can explain that, then how do you, and of course, once you get into multiplicity and diversity, you have a whole spectrum of feelings and emotions and thoughts and opinions and ideas. And what we're trying to do here tonight is reintegrate multiplicity and diversity back into the unity of our essential self, which is in no way colored by any variation of the white light, and brings us down to that impartial justice and beginnings of conscience, because now we are experiencing the unity of an essential self, and things like hope or self-pity or obligation kind of fall away. They're like leaves that just fall from the tree at the end of the season.
Yeah, they naturally fall away. And that's the whole point here, is that some of these things will naturally fall away as we stand in our rightful home, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
When we stand there, these other things they're just not there. It's not like in stop doing this sort of thing. They're just not part of the dialogue. They're not in that vocabulary. But I also want to pick up something you mentioned, the group work. Now, here we are, just a very small number of people. In this room right now, there are five individuals that we're working together. And online, Jan, I don't know what there's, 10, 5?
21.
21 viewers. Mm. So together, now why is this small group, why is it even important that we come together? I'll tell you why it is for me. For me, it's important because when I express the experience that I have of what I call the essential self, what I also call the fresh vibration that is, and I speak it out, suddenly there's someone I can talk to about it. And they say, yes, I know what you mean. And I feel a brotherhood and a sisterhood. And then when I can speak it out, in a sense, I'm declaring it, right?
Yes.
It's a declaration of that space. And for me, when I declare it in that way, in a group of friends like I truly have here, in that kind of group of friends, when it says to the sleeping machine, be aware, be forewarned, someone else is at play here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Well, that's good. Yeah.
So when we can acknowledge, and this is in capital letters, when we can acknowledge and see each other and acknowledge that seeing of the other, my little teeny drop of essential self then is empowered by yours and yours by mine. And we begin that dance once one another together. And it's a beautiful dance, isn't it? So that's our group work, too. We come together in that way. And we're saying, almost as this little teeny group of people here, we're saying to the sleeping machine and the impossibility of the work before us, I'm here. We're planting our flag.
Yeah, it's good. Well, you know, right? That's good. Yeah,
that's
I really
cool.
I appreciate what you're saying, but you know, I would like to add to that you know, to me, this is, I think it's tremendous. I think it's incredible, actually. It's almost beyond the laws of physics that there are 20 or 25 of us meeting like this. I would just like to say, you know, from my experience, like my attempts with study circle work, for instance, in Tucson, Arizona, you know, the most people I ever gathered for anything were probably, you know, by offering some movements classes. I think I once got a dozen or 15 people to come out, of which one person was interested enough to actually come to another meeting, you know, which I consider to be a great success. And, you know, in like a study circle for us in Tucson, I mean, the most people we ever had sit down in a circle was maybe six or seven.
So
people.
When
and it's like, you know, and the profile of my study circle is that the six or seven people weren't constant, you know, like after, like just like EJ has been saying for years, decades, you know, if you test people by seeing in 6 months of meeting every week or two, are they still there in a year? How about, you know, 52 weeks of meetings, how interested are they? Well, I mean, it was very irregular. I mean, people were not necessarily dependable. In other words, this is, so in a sense, I'm talking about like my attempts to exercise magnetic center and
yeah.
So on had very irregular and unpredictable results.
Nevertheless.
But I'm saying this group here, what I'm seeing, this group here, you've got like not only are there 20 or 25 people here, but in a certain way, this is so much like a postgraduate seminar.
It is a postgraduate
seminar. Each one of these people, you look at Pianjo there, you know, is represented, it's like he has a group of people that he's obligated to, in a sense. He turns around and he's working with how, you know, however many people he's got there. And Jamal and Moksha are in a whole Sufi community. And then you've got the Coyotes group down in Riverside. I mean, so people, it's almost as if you have the, you know, everybody in this kind of postgraduate seminar is, in a way, is representative of some other group of people,
and
some other circle. It's like a bunch of intersecting circles of people.
And, yeah,
so
I'm not
it's
sure.
It's exceptional.
It is exceptional. I'm not sure Piff is there. We're talking about someone who's worked very hard for 30-plus years at this material.
Yeah. And Mark in Winnipeg, same thing.
And Mark in Winnipeg, Mark Roach, I don't know.
Yeah.
These are people of a lot of time in grade. And what we're doing together is acknowledging that essential self. Now we come to the graduate level question. It's
okay.
In the next paragraph.
There'll be a quiz on this next
week. This should be your life essay, actually.
Okay.
And it would be interesting, actually, it would be a great seminar to put together where we spent the day on the next paragraph.
Okay, let's do it.
One learns how to replace unconscious habits with habits leading automatically and perpetually to conscious life. Have you ever read this before?
I have, but I'm not so sure that
That leading automatically and perpetually to conscious life. Oh! I forgot to bring it.
I remember having a discussion over some language very similar to this in a human biological machine, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Maybe Pianjo or.
Does anybody have?
Remember that.
Does anybody have a copy of Spinoza's on the improvement of the understanding with them?
Hello.
Nobody.
I must have left that at home.
Oh my God.
I think I left my copy in the car.
Okay. In that, he says, after experience has taught me that the usual surroundings of normal life are vain and futile, and seeing that none of the objects of my mind and none of the objects of my fear contained in themselves anything real. Then he goes on, he says, I then proceeded to seek some way of life, and now I'm diverting from the quote, that would bring me unending and eternal happiness.
That's a big order, unending and eternal happiness.
Well, what does it say right here? Habits leading automatically to conscious life. Spinoza, when he said happiness, he didn't mean a new Cadillac, by the
okay.
way.
I'm just thinking that this
If I may say something there, David?
Yes, Simon.
My take in that paragraph that you read is, and in my experience, is that we have or have begun basically with the method, with the guidance, in which definitely requires the creation of new habits. But as we practice more and more with that, the method becomes a way of life. And that is when the conscious habits have been incorporated instead of the unconscious ones. Because every time that we wake up the machine, there is an act of will. And every time that we do a sacrifice, there is an act of will that requires consciousness.
So what does this mean? What does this mean? Habits. Develop habits.
David, this is Mark in Winnipeg.
Mark in Winnipeg, greetings.
That's great, Mark.
I've been keeping a low profile because of my phone bill.
Uh-oh.
18 habits are in the joy of sacrifice. I would say 18 habits are 18 gradations of reason. But there's only two kinds of habits. One kind of habit is leading automatically to unconscious life, and I'm deriving this information from actually a talk on habits. And the other habit is a habit that leads to conscious life. Habits are not conscious or unconscious in themselves, but the meaning of repetitively, slowly, and consciously replacing an unconscious habit, a habit that leads to unconscious life, with a habit that leads to conscious life is, in EJ's terminology, the meaning of Zen.
Well, thank you for...
The last 20 minutes of habits says a bit about the book on joy of sacrifice. He does talk about that.
Oh, good.
And gives perspectives that aren't in the book itself.
So we can get that talk at some point.
It's a talk called Habits, okay.
Yeah.
It's a talk called Habits, yeah. My copy is on tape and it's so degraded that I was going to quote a few paragraphs, but... it's so degraded. I don't trust myself.
Yeah, I'm sure it's on CD now.
Write that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Get a copy from Mark. Okay.
David, may I say something?
I'll send you a CD, Mark.
I'll send you a CD on me. Okay. Yes, Harry.
That's a Christmas present.
You know, Mark, you actually said something very much to this effect a while back, where you said you when you wake up in the morning, the first thing you do is you put your hands on your chest and you thank the universe and God for this opportunity for another day to work. I remember you're saying that. And so we end up like the fifth chapter of 1 Thessalonians, to pray without ceasing, to always invoke that sense of the absolute and the sacred. And that is a habit that begins to, precede every activity that we do. Isn't that what we're talking about?
It is what we're talking about, Harry. And for me, this is at the end of a book called The Joy of Sacrifice. And this, to me, that paragraph is like a graduate school level test question. How exactly do you do this? Not what do you think you should be doing? What do you think... is the right answer, but what is it that you are doing that creates this habit that automatically and perpetually leads to conscious life? some people.
Well, having not reached that final place, I can't say, but I do know that I seem to be talking to God more often. everything I do is preceded by a prayer of some sort.
So for Harry, it's this idea that everything is preceded by a prayer. When he goes to the supermarket and he picks up a can of Bon Ami.
Yes. Certainly every time I have a new client walk into my office.
And so a new client comes in, and it's not just a client that he's billing, et cetera, but it's like this world has walked into his space. And his sacred duty at that moment is, who is this that has come before me?
Exactly. That's exactly it.
And the quote from Thessalonians, of course, is that is what is the heart of a lot of the Jesus prayer in the Eastern Orthodox tradition. You know, pray without ceasing, and that's their methodology. It's actually, anyway, it's worth working on too. So what are your habits that automatically lead to this conscious life? What are the triggers that occurred between the days, or more importantly, what are the inner triggers, the inner sensitivities that trigger the waking state at the most unusual moments? Okay? What are they? And all I'm saying is take note of them. Those are the, that's your tool belt. Those are your weapons as you proceed forth in this battle against powers and principalities. It is a great battle, but we have some tools to wage. We are not without without hope here. We bring what we have to the game. Are there comments that should be read?
Not really, David.
Pardon? Okay,
I don't see anything
you.
Particular, but maybe somebody else does.
Aurea says,
okay, thank you.
Can you hear me, David?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Go ahead,
Simon.
Aurea says, car accident in question mark. I got rear-ended today after an important conversation. No damage.
I'm glad, but
she's pointing to some incident, some strong attention incident, I guess. But my first thought was, what does this shock mean?
There's two levels. On one level, it's just a car accident. It's a miscellaneous event. But it's also how you look at it. If it's just an anger event, it's one thing. But if it's an event that just is a shock to drive home a point, that's another way of taking it. And I don't know what people are doing in their lives from day to day or what conversation you might have been having, but it's look at the whole picture of things for a little while. Don't just, oh gosh, and then suddenly you're involved in that. So that's our work right now is, what are those habits that you, as a voyager, have begun to develop? I don't know if Path World is on. It is? She is?
Mm-hmm.
The Path World, she wakes up and she has to face this stupid labyrinth out in her yard. And, oh my God, people are going to be coming any minute now and they're going to walk the labyrinth. And yet, when she's in the space of doing that, it's a beautiful dance. And the moon, full moon, which was a few weeks ago, I guess now, it's quite something when you go to that event. And she carries that inner momentum for, 16, 17 years now. Okay.
It occurs to me that the big 24, you know, the attention exercises from the practical work on self, I would think would be useful. Habits. I feel like if I can remember, to carry out the attention exercises, it would be in the category of conscious habits.
And the point is that you do carry out some of them.
Well,
you
when
do.
I remember to carry them out, then I'm done.
What are the ones that
you're practicing a conscious habit?
Yes, you are.
It's like a doorways exercise.
I could share that.
Go ahead.
No, I share that with Ivan. One of the ways that I have to, beside the rituals that I may have at the moment of eating, beside that I have a few rituals during the day, but I usually keep practicing doors, the exercise on the self, doors, and the walking between raindrops, you know, trying to walk in funny ways or patterns to break my patterns. And so in that way, I keep, you know, through the day, bringing me to change my habits and making me more present, I guess.
And like the last chapter.
One very important for me, that just I'm sorry to interrupt you, is the center of gravity question. I find that it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Center of gravity.
For some people, their habit that leads to more of a conscious life is actually a struggle, an inner struggle. Maybe, am I on the path? Am I doing the right thing? Is this the right kind of effort? Am I making the right decision or not making the right decision? If it's not just mental chatter, it can lead you to this heightened state of awakeness that you can then use for yourself. Each of us, once again, has a different signature we bring to it. And we have a lot of miles on the road, and sometimes sharing those with others, and if you'd like to do it on the website, that would be nice, wingsofchaos.com. what is your methodology? This can be a small thing, one sentence. And it'll help others know. I happen to know that Ivan is very, very, very sensitive to individuals in a very unusual way, in a way which I would call an act of hospitality. And I've seen him both working in the office. People come in, and they always want something from Ivan. And a part of him can't say no. But that's because this sensing of hospitality is there. That's one of the tools he carries around. I've seen it when you go at the store, when you work at the bookshop too. So you might say, well, that's unconscious. That's built up to a lot of lifting 5-pound weights over and over again over many years.
Well, it's a good question is whether it's a conscious habit or not. I would say it's a habit that promotes leads to consciousness.
That's what we're talking about.
That's what I mean.
That's what we're talking about.
So, you know, my take on the Big 24, it's like it seems like over and over again the issue is self-remembering. It's sort of like, you know, I have to invoke presence. I have to use the invocation of presence exercise just to remember to do, you know, the walking between raindrops or the doorways exercise or the center of gravity question. So it's a matter of that shift that you're talking about, where instead of being in a haze or being mesmerized in a sense where I'm present, where I have moments or strings of moments of presence.
And so there's this particular, for me, There are a number of them. But for me, one of them is when my facial mask starts to take on a certain tension. He's in self-remembering at that moment. In other words, when that configuration of muscles starts to hit, boom, what's going on? So that's become, we can say that it's an unconscious habit, but we're discerning between those habits of the machine and the habits of the essential self. My habits will carry me through. Part of what our work here is, and in this cycle of our evolution, part of our work is preparation for the transit between worlds. And to prepare ourselves to work more consciously in the bardos. As soon as you lose the body, you do not have marker points. You don't have marker points to say, oh, I feel okay, or something like that. Mm-hmm. You are on your own. Yeah, but what on your own are you? You have the possibility at that point of being in the world of eternality, and that eternality springs from the essential self. And at that point, what habits have you discerned? What has come to you to be something that is worthy and that is workable for you?
Hey, David, Pith just posted a good answer to just that question. David, as I came to see, one suffers unconsciously in any case, and to recognize this and learn to suffer consciously instead, one can create a habit of awakening.
Wow.
Wow. So that's, think, well.
To suffer consciously?
Yeah.
Did you ask Piff to post that, please, David?
She already did.
Well, it's posted on the site,
on
too,
the
if she's,
of Chaos.
If she's willing to, yeah.
Yeah,
so
on the website.
That brings to mind, yeah, I think that's a very strong example, because it seems to me, like for myself, the most obvious habit leading to unconscious life, you know, is the habit of being reactive, of having the same emotional reaction to anything negative. Like Aria, you're talking about, hey, when somebody rams into the back of your car, you know, like what is your immediate response? You know, like I have a tendency when I'm stressed, you know, to just get really irritated and depressed. And it's like, oh, I've screwed up again. I've screwed everything up and everything's going badly and Mercury's in retrograde, you know, and the... stones are falling down the cliff, and now, you know, somebody's going to dump water on my head or whatever, you know, like, and that, I mean, that is a habit of, it's an emotional habit, it's a machine habit, and
it's reactive,
it's automatic. Well, I have perceived for myself that definitely leads to unconscious life, because it's just like a entropic decline of state, you know, just because, oh, you know, something stresses me. Well, I mean, I figure that where I should be, and I can't always be there, is like, oh, I screwed up, or something's gone wrong, or, you know, my hand is bleeding, or whatever, you know. And, let's just go on, let's handle it, you know, get the...
Let me tell you a little story.
Get the iodine or...
About
know,
that.
Alcohol.
We were, when we had the museum in Nevada City, we'd worked there a lot, and there was one day when we were there, EJ was there, and we got a call from the land saying that some, I think it was the sheriff, had shown up. And so he called me over, we got in the car, and we drove back. And, you know, that's not a simple thing. And we were concerned. And so we're driving back. It's about a 20-minute drive, 15-minute drive. And it was just he and I, which was unusual. And as we're going back, he turns and he says, we were discussing what could it be, what are the issues, how to handle it, how I would interact with the sheriff and so on. And then he turns to me and, you know, Ari, I don't know if this was refers to your incident. He goes, he said, turns to me very pointedly, and he says, we must be doing something right.
We must be doing something right because the universe is resisting.
The universe comes back and pushes back sometimes. And what's our normal reaction to when we have pushed back? We fold. We give up. But maybe it just pushes back because it's time to be pushed back. And this is, do you mean it?
Yeah, right.
And the incident unfolded very simply, by the way. It was just very simple,
yeah.
Handled
excellent.
It well. It was our state, where were we at when we responded to this situation. That was the cure to it. So you will get tested, and I remember once in this regard, you know, we had gone through some challenging times, and Kelly was there, and it was very challenging, and EJ's explaining the challenge point, and he says, well, you know, like you always test circuit boards, right?
Yeah.
Okay. To see if they work. I'm just
circuit
testing
board.
You. And she says, yeah, you're taking the circuit board and beating it against the wall to see if it's going to survive. Some didn't.
Exactly.
David, that's what happened to my computer again this evening. The server completely crashed, so I'm having to do this with the auditory input only. Pretty
well,
interesting experience.
Have you here, but
the universe is obviously pushing back for you, Harry.
Hey, Dave, let me read a couple of more entries in the log here.
Yeah, read them.
Piff continues, the non-expression of negative emotion, the non-expression of negative emotion is a great example of suffering consciously toward one's awakening. That, I suppose, and I also want to read Dose comment here. Will you read the rest of the sacrifice as well? There was a question we had about something in the last paragraph.
We'll get to that in about 1 minute, 2 minutes.
Yeah, we're running out of
anything
time.
Anything else to read, George?
Not particularly.
Okay, let's just go to that because we are starting, as usual, to run out of time. So then now we have come to the last paragraph of this sacrifice. It is here that one's will, attention, and mental powers are developed to the fullest. So when we're in this state, this part of the sacrifice, that's where these tools are developed. One may now attempt to transmit to others the method as one understands it so far, and may use one's magnetic force of attraction to bring pupils under the influence of the school, as you mentioned earlier. When necessary, it is permitted to use one's power to save a life. Perform experiments with forcible division of psyche and essence, or to create energies for work. Without full development of this potential, fusion of the seventh body is not possible. So, question.
Well, if Dose has a question, she should type it in or speak up.
Yeah, no, they're not on the phone. So what happens is when you start to go into and development of this fourth and fifth body, and these you start to separate from the mechanicality of the sleeping machine, you do start to develop the magnetic center, Ivan.
Yeah, that part I understand. I think a lot of the rest of this I feel is beyond me. I think it's like above my pay grade.
Okay.
But being, I mean, I understand what EJ is getting at, but I think there are practices that we can be doing that are what could you say, like time and grade, you know, where you're a preparation for this type of work, you know, but. You know, I just remember this from even years ago, some of the earlier talks, you know, I heard of EJ's, and Mark could probably confirm this, that, you know, once in a while EJ used to talk about this, this idea that in developing these higher bodies, there's a stage in which cities, you know, in which psychic powers, you know, or let's say essential self type powers are developed and so on. And then, you know, and then one of the big cautions that he used to talk about that is this is where just like what do you call it, one of the four enemies in Castaneda, you know, this is where a lot of people get stalled in their development.
Yeah.
Is being obsessed with with their superiority to mere humans or this type of thing. You know, being what's it called? Power, you know, the power obsession or something. And then but the you know, what this sacrifice is talking about here, I think, is the appropriate orientation at that stage in one's development, which is to be looking at, you know, what are the specific powers that he talks about? Well, you could save someone's life, or you could separate psyche from essence to liberate. In other words, he's talking about uses of powers that are being directed, you know, very much by school energies, you know, by with a work object, you know, under the umbrella of awakening and consciousness, and not fooling around like wizards, you know, or sorcerers or something.
Right. Hey, David, Dose did post her question. What does EJ mean by experiment forcible division of psyche and essence? What does EJ mean by experiment? Well, let's see, how exactly did that? Form experiments with the forcible division of psyche and essence. Are these experiments on oneself or others or both? There's a big question for you.
It's Mark in Winnipeg. I think Ivan was covering that question. These are the conditions of the sacrifice where one performs this, the dramatization of siddhas. And I think one of the phrases is called hooding the cobra.
Oh.
And that's demonstrating the cities, the powers, is in conjunction with school or lineage rules to enable to propagate the teaching, not for oneself. And that one does this voluntarily. And one must then hood the cobra to move on to the last sacrifice. That's my understanding of it.
I don't know that that's answering the question.
Yeah.
Of the forcible, the experiment.
Yes. Wait. I'm not sure that I know the answer to the...
David, could I suggest something?
Yes. Please.
Go ahead.
Gurdjieff talks about, I forget which text, but where he would, I think it was in Search of the Miraculous, and Ouspensky was reporting on it, where Gurdjieff would take a man that would come to visit them and feed this poor soul some drugs of various kinds, the names of which I'm sure he kept to himself, so as to separate his essence from his personality. And the guy would age regress to maybe 8 or 10, and he would point out that this was a human being who had whose essence had stopped growing at that age, and everyone could see it.
Right.
So I don't know what that would mean for those of us who are not at that level of work.
Well, Harry, don't you think, see, again, I think this is what Mark was saying, too. My feeling about this passage is that whether that means to be doing this on oneself or others, this represents a very advanced degree of competence. You know, this is somebody...
I agree.
And this
above my level. I've tried playing with children to do this, and I think that helps.
Sure. No, but what I'm saying is the individual that EJ is describing using such powers, I believe he is also saying is that individual is beyond, what was it, hope, self-pity, sacred obligation. You know, I believe that he would say that individual is also beyond, you know, manipulation, selfishness, and, you know, using the dark side powers on people or something. You know what I mean?
Well, let's hope that the person performing that experiment, if they're performing it on others, is beyond those human traits. Because when you get to a certain level of power, you are able to create, because of the very force of your nature, a division between the psyche and the essential self. And if it's not done with caring, their damage can occur. And so I think that this is an area that is very delicate.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very delicate area.
Right.
And whether it is something that you are attempting to do or is done upon you, I think it's something that your caution flag should be up. And it's fine to move very slowly in this area. Very slowly.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're obviously at the point of very, very, you know, the high high altitudes, and there's not much oxygen up there. And we just have to do as best we can. But we can err, we can know to err on the side of caution in regard to these things.
Well, David, aren't these sacrifices really just a precis of coming attractions? I mean, a year or two could be spent on each one of these and still not really fulfill it.
That's
so
correct.
This is kind of a peek into the future.
Well, and that's what we're doing.
Our own work development.
That's exactly right, Harry. And we are just doing that. Just like that middle paragraph, people can write a 10-page essay on that for whatever their work is.
Well, yeah, and what you're saying, Harry, is I think I said this earlier on in the sacrifices, one of the discussions we were having about whether to interpret the sacrifices or how to interpret the sacrifices. You know, I think there are still options for how to interpret the sacrifices, but I personally think now making this walk through them again, you know, with our group here, I mean, I'm impressed, as I was before, that these are life or death matters. A number of the things that he's bringing up here are not they're not easy, and they may be simple, but they're not exactly easy, and they have to do with, you know, some of these thresholds and zones that he's talking about going through, you know, or barriers that he's talking about passing through and going past. These are irreversible. This is still my impression.
Well, that's
the changes that we're talking about are irreversible, and he's talking about some very profound areas.
So we're talking about work on self here for the moment. At our level, it's work on ourself.
Yeah.
Okay. So we leave this sacrifice with a large question, reread that central paragraph, and see what you can do with it. So we're coming to the end of our time.
Okay.
And I want to thank Ivan and everybody here for coming, and everybody online, and for what you're helping in this collaborative effort. So we will not have a class next week. We'll take it up on the 30th. Thank you for coming.
And please post on the Wings of Chaos. I really enjoy reading people's posts. I think it's a fantastic resource. You know,
I agree, Ivan. It is great.
Yeah. I really appreciate, you know,
and I appreciate
from people,
Harry.
And commenting back.
Harry's
and forth
done a lot in the last
online,
couple of weeks.
And
as is Aria, did the one wonderful one on 16.
Yes, she did.
So thanks again, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, David and Ivan.
Harry, Mark.
Thank you.
Good night.
Guys.